Hello, everybody, and welcome to Upstate On The Move, a podcast highlighting entrepreneurs who are on the move here in upstate New York. My name is Jack Carpenter, and I'm joined by my co-host, Bob Manasir, who is the entrepreneur in residence here at Ignite U.
Hello, everyone.
How you doing today, Bob?
I'm good, Jack. How are you?
I'm very good. We have a very special guest coming in today, Jeff Schwartz, who is a partner at Phillips Lytle, and he's been involved with Ignite U, I think, since we started.
Yeah, him and his partner have been here for a long time, and my relationship to Jeff goes back to T-ball days with our son, so I've known Jeff a long time.
Wow. Back up in Saratoga T-ball.
Yes.
From Saratoga to Ignite U. You guys go to the track a lot together?
I've spent some time at the track with Jeff.
Yeah, I bet you do.
It is a sight to see,
Jeff, at the track. What should we know about Jeff? Paint us his picture.
High energy, very thoughtful, really wants to convey value and being there, not always about billing, which is the moniker all lawyers have, but they're just going to bill you to death. Mm-hmm. Jeff and his whole law firm really give back to the community, like most of the people we bring on this podcast. So yep. He's a great community partner.
Yeah. Community first. They're always all over the place. And we've talked about the ROI. It's business development at the end of the day. But it's still a challenge for startups to put a community first.
And as a downstater, too, he talks bluntly, which I always appreciate. So.
Us upstaters will get used to that. Well, let's bring Jeff in and see what he has to say.
Awesome.
All righty, folks. We are sitting down with Jeff Schwartz, who is a partner at Phillips Lytle. Now, Jeff, in order for our audience to get more familiar with you, we would like to hear your elevator pitch.
Wow. I often counsel people on giving the elevator pitch, but now you want mine? I like this idea. I am a deal attorney, period. I get deals done. Clients come to me. They have transactions. We get them over the finish line. We do it quickly. We do it efficiently. We keep our eye on the prize.
What do you think?
I thought it was horrible, but whatever.
I thought that was very Michael Avenatti.
Wow.
Is that a compliment or a diss? No, depends who's watching, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's a media guy. I think I'm a little more substance.
Well, you had a lot of emphasis words in there. Like, you were going to get it done. You do deals. And what do you mean by that?
Well, you see, there's the courtroom lawyers that you see on TV. That's not the real world. I have people who want to buy companies or want to sell companies, and they come to me to get it done on terms that make the buyer happy and the seller happy.
That's a better elevator pitch.
Boom. We just
helped you.
Yeah.
I would drop the mic, but it looks expensive. So.
Yeah, don't drop that.
Okay.
And we don't own it yet, so thank you.
Understood.
We're going to talk about journey, right? So we're big at Ignite U about journey, right? Because we always say we're developing the entrepreneur, not the business so much, because we know most businesses fail. In a short, concise manner, can you give us your journey of how you got here? Because you are not an upstater.
I got here. I just drove from my office. You don't mean like that, right?
Nice.
Okay. Nice. I am a downstater, but I was always sort of an old soul. I used to be a youthful curmudgeon, then I just aged out, and now I'm a curmudgeon. So even though I'm from down in the city, I always wanted a different kind of life. Mm-hmm. I think the city is for certain types of people. Personally, I've always felt it's for the really, really, really rich or the really, really, really poor because it doesn't matter to either of those people. But I wanted a different kind of pace of life. So even though I'm from downstate, I came up to the Albany area to go to law school. I went back to the city for a few years to work at a really big law firm and get a ton of great experience. And then I moved up here because I wanted to live in Saratoga, a place to raise my family. And the pace of life just kind of matches me a lot better than kind of a big metropolitan area.
And there's a lot of horses.
I figured we'd have time to get into that, but yes, there are.
I'm just throwing that out there now.
Okay, we can talk about horses somewhere down the road.
Well, more importantly, where do you think upstate New York begins? Because you kept referencing downstate as Manhattan.
So for hardcore city residents, they think there's the five boroughs and then everything north of, say, Yonkers is like Canada.
Okay. See, that's just misinformation.
That is correct.
What? Oh, my God.
For me, it's probably the Hudson Valley, wherever like the New York City people have a house that they claim is upstate in like Putnam, Westchester. That's probably where the line is.
That's fair enough.
I would say the Tappan Zee Bridge, but it's not called that anymore, so.
No. So you can't. So how long ago did you come to Saratoga?
I moved to Saratoga about 20 years ago. So when I came up, it's really interesting. I was at a big law firm, and in fact, it's funny you mentioned the Tappan Zee, which is now the Governor Mario Cuomo Bridge, because when he left office, he joined the law firm I was at. I wouldn't say we hung out, but we were at the same law firm at the same time.
Yes.
He had a big corner office, and I was in some sort of broom closet, I think. I did not join Phillips Lytle, but I joined a small entrepreneurial law firm called Honan & Wood. And we really were a business law firm, which is a very odd animal in this area. Mm-hmm. Because since you're the state capital, you have lobbying, litigation, insurance, things that surround practice that, you know, involves kind of the government and the governmental drivers. We were business lawyers, which was, again, a really interesting kind of model. And that was well before the burgeoning entrepreneurial, you know, system and company starting. I was there when I moved up here. And that whole firm, which was small, all joined Phillips Lytle about 12 or 13 years ago. So I'm with the same people I started with, just in a, okay. in a new place.
Okay. So you guys are benefiting from the boom in the entrepreneurial ecosystem here in upstate New York, right?
We are, but interestingly, when my partners hired me then, we actually, nobody really wanted that space, right? So you guys are familiar with kind of what's going on here and all the initiatives, startups, incubators, accelerators, the work that you do to build the system out. When I first came up, there was very little of it. My colleague hired me to help him grow that practice, and we started doing it, and nobody even wanted it. I mean, now there's a number of competitors. It's a more crowded space, which speaks to how robust it is and how legitimate it is. But in the beginning, it was empty. It was cavernous.
And then why'd you get into it?
Because I am actually, I know I'm a deal guy. Even when I went into law school, I knew I was never going to be a courtroom lawyer. That's not of interest to me, which is kind of funny because I've been told I have the gift of gab. So they think I would be a courtroom lawyer, but it just doesn't appeal to what I want to do. That's sort of a zero-sum game. There's a winner and a loser.
Yep.
I had people who, you know, want to accomplish a transaction. So you have a buyer and a seller, and the buyer wants to buy at a price and the seller wants to sell at a price. And if you do it right, presumably everybody kind of leaves sort of happy. Mm-hmm. So I knew that was what I wanted to do, and I think you could add a lot of value there.
Yeah.
So we started in that space, and we kind of grew up with that space in this area.
How did you discover that you were a deal guy and not a courtroom guy?
My brother, my one sibling, was a year ahead of me in law school. We didn't go to law school together, but he was 1 year ahead of me, and he also was sort of a deal guy, and I guess maybe that just appealed to both of our senses. I don't know. The confrontation just didn't do it for me. Maybe it was too theatric, but the analytics, the process of doing deals, seeing all the moving pieces kind of come together, I felt like that's where I could bring value to the mix, and hopefully I have.
So I'm going to give a nod to you and your partner, Rich, because I think without your community activism and involvement in everything that's going on in upstate New York, we wouldn't have kind of the bandwidth we do now. So that's my one compliment to you, Jeff.
That's it.
Probably in knowing you for like 15 years, my one compliment.
So in another 15, there'll be another. That's awesome.
I got to start working on that now.
Thank you.
So can you share why you and your partner and your law firm are so active in the space? And that's not just about the paid side. It's all the volunteer work you do.
There's a couple of things that you'll find over the course of this discussion. I have a lot of thoughts about a lot of things at a high level in this business, because I think lawyers historically are not great business people, but I happen to think that we are, which doesn't mean we're great business people in a vacuum, but I think we're good business people for lawyers, and that helps us see our clients' pain and partner with them. So without belaboring that point, there's a couple of reasons that we do this kind of community piece. The very first one was when we started doing the work that we do in the venture capital and startup space, and you all can appreciate this specifically by being in it, people didn't know what it looked like at all. So we would have a startup client that would get a term sheet from an investor. And to oversimplify, the term sheet would basically say, to get the money, you have to give us your firstborn son. And then Rich and I, my partner Rich Honan, we would negotiate these deals and get it to the point where you just had to give up your dog. And we're high-fiving each other because we know we did good work for our client, and we give them the documents, and they say, why'd you give up my dog? because the market didn't understand enough about what it looked like to know what a good deal was. So we realized we had to educate people, which is kind of funny because you probably wouldn't counsel any of your startup companies. You better solve a problem that's out there, not have to educate people that there's a problem. But we knew it was coming, and these people just didn't know what deals look like. I mean, they were hiring as their lawyers people that you might hire to help you buy a house. And God bless them, they do great work for what they do. I can't do that. But they didn't know this space. So there was no reference point. So we wanted to educate, right? Just so the market knew what we were doing. And a much bigger picture, when it was less about kind of paying the bills and getting some more years under my belt and getting established, I love this area. I'm a downstate guy. I don't think I'd want to live anywhere else. I like Saratoga. We can talk horses and polo and SPAC and all the stuff I love up there. But you hear about it. There's, you know, great academia. Then where do the kids go? They leave the area. I really believe what's good for the area is good for me. And Bob, you and I specifically have talked extensively about some long-term selling cycle. So yeah, this is all good for business, but I want to get the knowledge out there. Part of leaving the city is I have enough time in my day to kind of do my job, quote unquote, and do the speaking and teaching and writing. And I do it extensively. Is it good for me? Is it good for my brand? Is it good for the firm? Is it good for business? Sure, but I'll capture it this way. Many times when I do these, people ask me, when should I hire a lawyer? And I say, not for a long time, but when should you talk to one? Immediately, because you can get ahead of that and keep people from making the mistakes. So I kind of want to give back. It's something I like to do, and that's part of leaving the rat race of the city for a different pace of life up here.
What's the biggest misconception people who are part of the deal have when they go to do a deal?
Well, a couple of things. One, not quite a misconception, but there's a lot of people who aren't in a position to do the deal when they come to me with the deal, right? So there's a whole bunch of stuff that should have happened before that they didn't do that I have to do to get them where they should have been when they came to me. Mm-hmm. Like that's doing the right foundation, doing all the legwork, being prepared. And that could be weeks, months, years in advance. And the other thing, and this is about the legal business generally, and I'm literally in the process of writing something about this, is you have to understand you know, that we're partnering with you to get the deal done. You can understand a lot of people don't like legal fees. They think lawyers are disincented from being, you know, cost effective and efficient. You have to trust us to partner with you. So you have to understand what kind of goes into it. And it's never as seamless. It's probably true in a lot of other industries, but it's never as seamless and quick and easy as people think it is. It's just not the nature of the beast.
So we're always trying to give takeaways to our audience, right? Most of them are the entrepreneurs that we talk endlessly about that never speak to legal counsel and then do deals and agreements. And then 6 months later, they're fighting over pennies or nothing. What are some of the questions they should be asking at this point to you and your partner or any other lawyer to try to find the match, right? We always talk about match and culture fit and getting on the same team.
You mean amongst their team or when they're looking for
a lawyer? When they're looking for a lawyer, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, so the thing is, and a lot of my partners probably wouldn't like this line of thinking, but you know, over time, like a lot of professional services, there's going to be a commoditization, right? You see it with LegalZoom. You'll see the sending of legal work overseas to places where they have cheaper cost centers in other industries too, right? So I'm fanatical about the providing value. Value proposition is what drives me, right? That's the biggest thing for me. And I realize that it's some of what I do, you know, there's no magic to it. But as you get, you know, higher up the food chain in terms of complex matters, that's where I add the value. So it's getting somebody who has really an eye on the prize. And I tell my junior lawyers, because I speak to them all the time, you can do what the client wants. The client comes in and asks you to do something. You could do it quickly, cheaply, effectively, perfectly, and not have provided service to them because you didn't ask the questions to know enough about their business to see where it's going to go down the road. You know, so it's somebody who understands business, understands your bigger objective, who's willing to kind of invest in you and partner with you. Because like a lot of businesses, I'm building relationships. You know, look, I'm in this to make money. I'm putting two kids through college, just like you, Bob, are about to. So there's nothing wrong with making money, but I want to make it basically on your back. I want you to be wildly successful, so I'm, you know, incrementally successful based on your success. So it's long-term, it's relationship building.
How do you make people comfortable with that idea?
Well, here it is, and I am writing about it. It's I ultimately tell them, you have to trust me to spend your money. Okay. And literally this, I tell this all the time. I'll have some clients come to me and they'll say, Jeff, can you do X, Y, Z? And I'll say, you know what? You don't need me to do that. You can take care of it. Fine. So I'm saying, no, I don't want to charge you. Okay. But other times they come to me after they've tried to do it. And I say, okay, here's what it's going to cost me to fix it up because you did it yourself. And I'm charging you a premium because you didn't come to me because you didn't trust me. Early on, we had, we had a client that was a bunch of engineers, and they always tend to be the ones. And they would historically call us at like 4:30 in the afternoon. And I know the reason they called at 4:30 because they're thinking, well, it's 4:30, the day ends at 5. They can only charge me half an hour for legal work. Okay? And we're like, listen, we work 24 hours a day if we have to. We're a service business.
Yeah.
But that's the wrong mindset. You have to understand that, you know, we're in this to make money. We'll spend your money, but we'll be judicious with you. We get it. We're in business too. Mm-hmm. So it's all relationship driven. It's all building a rapport. It's trust.
How do you know to ask the right questions? Because we spend a lot of time here at Ignite U doing customer discovery, and it's all about the questions you're asking your potential customer. Mm-hmm. How do you learn to ask those right questions as a lawyer?
Yeah, so it's some sort of 80-20 rule. Like, you know, some questions will take out a lot of the big issues, right? And that's a lot of actually my day-to-day practice. And when I talk to my junior lawyers, here's the thing. It's, you know, I could write a contract that covers everything, okay? It's going to be $7 trillion, and it's going to take up more paper than this room, right? So by design, every day I'm baking into my life that I'm doing less than absolute perfection, which is a kind of an odd thing to contemplate. So I'm like, well, I know we have to take care of this. I mean, that's basic. And like a lot of people, you're always fighting the last war. So that's why contracts are as big as they are. You wrote this big one and then you say, oh my God, this happened. Now we need to cover it next time. So some of it's experience, but some of it is the classic in any industry. It's listening. And it's not that just sitting there for the other person to finish so you can talk. It's actually listening. So some it's intuitive, right? Some it's fungible to any industry. Like, we have to form a company. Do we need an LLC? Do we need a corporation? Okay. But others, I've got clients that, you know, make, you know, tangible products. They're making cardboard boxes. Well, that has one set of circumstances. I have others that make vitamin human nutrition premix. Now we're mixing chemicals. That's another. Right. Even lay people would know, well, if you're handling nuclear waste, that's a whole set of different, you know, problems there. So it's asking the questions and understanding their business. And what's particularly challenging in a profit-driven time and business is near term, that's costing you money. Right. Just like me being here is costing me money. I'm not billing anybody for it, but mm-hmm. I'm getting knowledge out. It's helping the bigger picture. You have to stop and understand the business. It's almost like the classic hockey stick curve. You're making an investment in your client. You're learning about them so you can be a more effective counselor. I mean, that's what allows you, you know, I'm reading the paper and I see an article and I send it to a client and be like, listen, this is happening in the industry. I think it's of relevance to you. They're not paying me to do that. They have people that do that. But it says to them, I understand your business. I'm aware of your business. I'm thinking about your business. So very long answer to your short question, Bob. It's some of it is experience. Some of it is being well-read. Right, I come in the office early, and you know, I grab, you know, the first of my 35 cups of coffee, and I'm reading. I'm online. I'm reading the journal. I'm reading, you know, other periodicals. I'm understanding what's going on in the marketplace, not because someone's paying me directly to do that, because it makes me a more value-added counselor. Because again, I'm moving away from the commodity side of work, and I'm being a value add.
Thank you, Jeff. I took notes on that one because I was listening. So.
Looks like your shopping list.
It is.
Skittles.
No comment. Skittles.
So what's your future looking like?
What I've really started, so now I'm 20 plus years into what I'm doing. And I really like, so I think of myself more and more as a sniper. It's funny, for a very detail-oriented organization-requiring business, I'm moving away from that personally. So forget about selling companies for hundreds of millions of dollars. If a small company wants to get a loan, an SBA loan, even a loan from a local bank, by the time the paperwork is done, that's 30 or 40 documents. We could talk about how crazy that is, but it's a stack of documents. And that's not as sexy to me. I mean, I do it for my clients. It's value-added work, but it's, again, more on the commodity side. I'm trying to be more of a sniper, push that work down to my junior people, and deploy myself when my experience matters. So from the business side of lawyering, if my, you know, billing rate is high and I have employees who have a billing rate that's low and they could do it, I want them to do it. That gets back to the trust of these clients trusting me to staff the matter correctly. But when I want to get on a call and there's 10 lawyers on there and we have an issue that we can't resolve and somebody's going to bang heads and get us through that, that's where I want to be. That's where my client's getting the expertise. That's what they're paying me for, to kind of get it done. So it's sort of some sort of selectivity and not going upmarket in the work, but in deploying my skills.
So from your point of view, what does this ecosystem need to mature, to continue the maturation?
Wow is the first answer, because Bob, you and I have talked about this for quite a long period of time. So the broad brush that the general region gets is the, you know, we have great academia, we have, you know, hospitals, we have higher learning institutions, we turn out smart people, we get them some early funding, and then the classic valley of death, right? There's not enough funding to get them over the hump, or the engineers go somewhere else to greener pastures, they go West Coast, someplace with a different kind of tax structure. Part of it, which you hear a little bit of, but not as much, is the there's a welfare mentality, right? So people surviving on grants or bumping along, and the fail fast that we keep talking about. When we came up the ranks, I guess this is gonna we're gonna break down along demographic lines here. But you know, maybe our parents, you know, got a job and you kept it forever, and if you didn't, what was wrong with you? Why did you have two jobs? Now if you don't have 10, what's wrong with you? And I've had some clients here that get it, but by failing, it's not a black mark. I mean, yeah, it's not the goal, but you're building a bench strength. You're building depth of other founders who can do it again. And we need some more of that. There's nothing wrong with the failure, but the, yeah, I'm bumping along for 3 years. I got a phase one. It's okay for some things that may need deep, expensive research, government-backed, but let's go foot on the gas. Let's, you know, make or break, go big or go home. And we need to kind of get that closer to the base level than so far out.
Excellent. Thank you.
Love it. What would you like from the community?
I mean, if they would stop working in August so I could just be at the racetrack would be, although that's sort of generally how I have it right now.
Yeah.
It's a tricky little space. So in my world, the proximity to other major metropolitan areas, if you were to kind of look at a map here, we were talking about this sort of earlier, you know, Montreal, Boston, New York. I mean, there's some sort of governor on critical mass here. Even the biggest law firms that are homegrown are 70 or 80 people. Then you get down to 50 or 40. You know, even you look at the list of public companies, maybe a dozen, two dozen, and then you kind of get to private industry. I would like, from my world, I would like more dollars to flow in here. That's one thing, and I have tried for a long time. We still stick at it. Money is the ultimate fungible resource to me. It should flow to the next natural deal like water. It should just level off on its own. When we started in this space, we, meaning my partner, you know, Rich Honan and I, when a term sheet ultimately was issued, you know, right on page one, you're going to move your company to Boston or New York. Like, you know, we don't trust you here. There's not enough talent here. And we want to come to quarterly board meetings. We're not going to go there. Okay. That's gone now. Like we've grown up enough that we're a legitimate hub. We have critical mass. You hear about it in gaming. It might be materials, might be folks out of GE. We have it now, but you know, you look at these mega rounds, right? Investors now, they're deploying tens of millions of dollars in an investment. Forget about raising tens of millions. That's what they're deploying, which means they're raising billion-dollar funds. Now, listen, if I could, you know, deploy $100 million here and get the right return, then I'm not going to do that deploying $25 million investments. But I would love to see some of that get sprinkled around. Not flyers. This is real money. They have a fiduciary duty to return that to their investors. But if somebody could really sprinkle sizable amounts of capital in a bunch of different hands around here, and it's out there. I'm not sure what the issue is, but it's not that they've run out. I mean, there are so much dry powder out there. I'd love to see some real institutional investment at a really high level come here in the hands. And I know many, you know, entrepreneurs who could deploy that effectively. I'd like to see that.
Love it. Jeff, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
certainly through our website at philipslytle.com. And I'm not a social media guy. We could talk about that. I do some extensive writing on LinkedIn, but I kind of like having some private business being private. Mm-hmm. But the website is good and always reachable. I mean, again, service business, so we're always on the grid.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming through and look forward to you participating more with Ignite You in the future.
I appreciate you having me. Anything else, feel free to find me. I'm reachable, as I said.
Thank you all for listening to Upstate on the Move, presented by Ignite You New York. Ignite You supports innovation and entrepreneurship across upstate New York and is powered by NYSTEC. For more information about Ignite You, or if you'd like to grow your business with us, please follow us on social media at IgniteUNY or online www.igniteuny.com. My name is Jack Carpenter, joined by my co-host Bob Manasser, and this podcast is produced by Richard Lynn.